What we're going to discuss today is Yeshu in the Talmud. I remember ever since I was a kid going to yeshiva, one would always hear various rumors about what the Gemara does say, what the Gemara doesn't say. And in the last couple of months, there was a certain individual who made a film which has spurred more questions to be posed. And I'd like to go through the sources. You'll see as we go on what the difficulties are with the sources. And I want to limit myself today. I mean, if necessary, then perhaps we can speak again. I'm not going to speak about the New Testament today. I'm not going to speak about, I'll touch it maybe, but I'm not going to speak about the film at all for a couple of reasons. One, I didn't see it. And two, I don't want to see it, and I don't want to speak about it. But there is what to talk about. And if anybody's interested in those topics, it's really a side point. Today it's really what does Jewish tradition say about the founder of Christianity? And that's assuming that the founder of Christianity is in fact someone named Yeshu, and the founder is not somebody named Paul. And perhaps we'll have time to come back to that as well. The first challenge that we have is finding the sources. And that's for a very simple reason, that all the sources that exist in the Gemara were taken out. The Gemara itself, as we have it, the Vilna Shas does not talk about Yeshu. There is a book, I don't know if it's available today, it's a little book, it's called Chisronos HaShas, anything which is missing from the Talmud. Here it is, these are the things that were taken out by censors, and you could put all the things back in. This tells you what was in earlier editions, what was in manuscripts, and what Jewish tradition did say about these things. If one has this book, then one can begin to reconstruct what Jewish tradition says. I will mention a second book before we begin, and that's a book which is called Christianity in Talmud and Midrash, by a Christian scholar named Herford. The only problem with his book is that he sees Yeshu on every page of the Talmud. He's convinced that's all that we were concerned about. And therefore he finds him between the lines, before the lines, under the lines. Every single page he sees something over there, which is why the book is so big. And his eyesight's a little too good. He does have a couple of points, though, which probably are accurate. One I'll just mention very quickly in passing. We do have a tradition which may go back to the Gra. And that is that when the rabbis did want to speak about Yeshu, they spoke about him in a different way. And therefore, there is reason to suspect that certain discussions in the Gemara, especially in Sanhedrin in the last parak, are when it speaks about Bilam, it's really speaking about Yeshu. And therefore, because Bilam being the prophet for the non-Jews, and when you see a Gemara saying that Bilam was 33 years old when he was killed, and his father was a carpenter, you begin to get suspicion that maybe they're speaking about somebody else. Okay, so I'll just mention that in passing, and as I said, that perhaps can be traced back to the Vilna Gaon. The sources that do speak about Yeshu, now aside from the problem of finding them, and if you do want to find them, you're going to have to look carefully. The Schottenstein edition has not put any of them back in, as far as I can tell. They're all left out still. Rabbi Steinzelt, in his edition, has put most of them back in, if not all. And the Cencino edition of the Gemara is inconsistent. Some it puts in, and some it puts in footnotes, and some in footnotes it tells you there's something which is missing. So just each volume was authored by a different person, and each different person had a different strategy as far as how to deal with this. The first and perhaps the most famous and maybe the most important, but I think ultimately we'll conclude not the most important, is a text which we find in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. This is Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. If you were to open up a Gemara Sanhedrin right now and look at this place, you will find the bottom of the page is around this much space which is missing. You can see that there's something missing from the page. It's visual, you can tell. Not only is the Gemara missing, but there's a Rashi commenting on a Gemara which isn't there. Rashi comments on the bottom of the page about part of the passage that was taken out. So if you don't know that it was taken out, you have no idea what Rashi's talking about. The Gemara says as follows. V'hotanya, who was taught it in Braisa, V'erev HaPesach Taluhu L'Yeshu HaNotri. On Erev Pesach, Yeshu HaNotri was hung. Now, you have to be careful about the hung here, because it doesn't mean what you think.
doesn't even mean that. V'hakruz yotze lefonav arba'im yom, and the crier went out 40 days prior. The crier, actually, this is the Rashi. The Rashi says arba'im yom. The Gemara is not there, but it says arba'im yom, and Rashi is just sitting there by itself. V'hakruz yotze lefonav arba'im yom, the crier went out 40 days prior and said, Yeshu hanotzri. Yeshu, by the way, most likely is the name. Yeshu is most likely a form of the name Yehoshua. Yehoshua means Savior. There are those who have suspected that Yeshu really stands for Yamach Shemo V'Zichro. May his name and memory be obliterated. Yeshu Hanotzri Yotze Lisakel. Jesus of Nazareth is to be taken out to be stoned. Now, you're questioning, is it stoned or is it hung? So any of you know the Mishnah and Sanhedrin will know that whoever is stoned, the body is then hung briefly. Could that be a confusion as far as the quote-unquote crucifixion? Who knows? But I guess the bigger question is, did the Jews kill him or not? If he was crucified, it was not done by the Jews. If the Jews killed him, he was not crucified. If the Jews killed him, they stoned him. I don't know if this will be an opportunity to open up a new industry to sell little rocks, you know, to all of our Christian friends. But listen, if you guys can make some money, why not? Yeshu HaNotzri is going to be taken out to be stoned. Why? Al Shekishef, for he was guilty of performing magic. V'heisit v'hidiach es Yisrael. And he was guilty, furthermore, of leading the Jews astray. That is a term used for someone who leads others to do Avodah Zarah. So the crime was one of Avodah Zarah. The crime was one of doing magic. And for that, he is going to receive skila. The crier continues and says, Kol mi sheyodea lo zchus, whoever has any merit to say for him, yavol v'yomar midalav, come and say it now. Or, you know, so speak now, forever hold your peace. They say that before a person is killed. That was a joke. V'lo matzo lo zchus, and they could not find any merit for him. V'taluhu be'erev ha-pesach, and he was executed in Erev Pesach. Incidentally, this Gemara already has a couple of problems. First problem is that a Beis Din does not kill somebody on Erev Chag. Beis Din doesn't function on Erev Chag. That's already something which is quite curious and quite difficult. Amar Ula. Ula asks, V'tizbara, what do you think? Yeshua Notzri bar hafuchet schusu? Are you going to say that he's somebody who there's something good to say about him? That you're going to find some merit and turn the case around? But more than that, Mesis who? He's a Mesis. What does the Torah say about Mesis? Rachmona Amar, the Torah says, you now have compassion. You don't cover up. You don't turn anything around for a mesis. Somebody who's a mesis guilty of trying to cause people to do Avodah Zarah, you have no compassion for such a person, and he needs to be executed immediately. What is this for 40 days beforehand? Goes against all the rules of halacha. The Gemara says something funny then. Elashani Yeshu. Yeshu is different. Dekarv l'malchus hava. He had a lot of friends in high places. He was karv l'malchus. So therefore, they have to treat him differently. Now, there's a couple of things which are missing from this Gemara that would have, if they were here, would have made us feel a lot more comfortable. Who taught this? When did this happen? Where did this happen? Matter of fact, if you pay attention to the Gemara over here, it almost transcends any historical context. We're not told where, when, how, why. And if that's not clear to you, as we go on to other texts, you'll see what a distinction there is between this text and the other ones. Tanu Rabbanon, the Gemara then goes further and says, Chamisha Talmidim Hayu Lo LeYeshua Notzri, he had five disciples. Masai, Nakai, Netzer, Uboni, Visoda. Asuya Lamatai, they came over to Matai and they said, Amr Lo. And he said to them, Matai Yehareg, will Matai, which of course all of you are thinking, wow, that sounds a little bit like Matthew, will Matai be killed? Haksiv, it says, Matai Avo V'Rei Pnei Elokim, when will I come and see the face of God? And to play on the word Matai. Amrulo, they said to him, in, yes, Matai Yehareg, Dichsiv, Matai Yomus V'Aved Shmo, when will he die and his name be forgotten? Now, let me stress something over here. I don't know if any of you know how the Sanhedrin or the Beis Din would work when it would execute people, and what was considered to be evidence and what was considered to be normal procedure within a Beis Din. This has nothing to do with the way a Beis Din works. As a matter of fact, even if you don't know how the Beis Din works, if all of you, thank God, growing up watched enough television, you should know this is not the way the trials are conducted. When we read this Gemara, you have to ask yourself, what is going on? What is this Gemara trying to tell us? Is this a real conversation that took place or not? And I want to warn you about something. When we look at these sources, we have to ask ourselves a question. Are we dealing with history or are we dealing with theology? Of course, the easiest thing would be to say is both. And the easiest thing would be to say, if the Gemara says something, it's true and nothing more to talk about. Only question is that correct? And we're not going to have a long discussion now on the rules and regulations of Agada. But hopefully all of you know well enough that when it comes to Agadah, there are different approaches to reading them. And some Agadahs are meant to be taken literally, and some Agadahs have a different point. Which means here's my question. Is the Gemara that we've read about till now, is it dealing with a historical individual named Yeshu HaNotzri? Or is it dealing with the founder of Christianity, the perceived founder of Christianity, and his disciples? When you read the verse, and by the way, all five disciples are similar verses, is this really the trial that we're listening to, or are we listening to a theological debate? It sounds much more like a theological debate. For Matthew, and by the way, Matthew never met Jesus, just to let you know this. The various disciples all lived far, the various gospels at least, all lived farther, and they never met him. When the verse which is used, Matai ovo v'arei pnei Elokim, when will I see the face of God? Do you see what Chazal is putting in the mouth of Christianity? That there's a need to be able to have a God incarnate. There's a need to have a God who you can see face to face. And what is the Gemara's response to such a claim? When are you going to die? That's the response to it. Again, I ask you, is this really what took place in the Beis Din, or is this the rabbis telling us our attitude towards early Christianity? And I want you to remember something. Early Christianity posed a problem which is very different than current Christianity. Early Christianity, they were all Jews. The early Jewish Christians were Jews who lived in the same neighborhoods, they lived in the same areas, and they made a lot of trouble for the Jews. Are we looking at something over here which is telling us about what really happened, or is this a Jewish attitude or the rabbinic attitude to what should have happened? The idea of killing somebody on Erev Yontiv is very difficult. The idea of the 40 days and so on is also quite difficult. The idea of making exceptions over here and the idea of Karav L'Malchus. By the way, when were the Christians Karav L'Malchus? When did they have connections within the Roman government? Much later. Which means, over here, are we witnessing a text telling us about what happened then, or what were the attitudes of the time that the text was being meant, and they were telling us a story between the lines. That as far as we're concerned, Christianity is illegitimate. As far as we're concerned, their theology is bankrupt. As far as we're concerned, the person who they claim to have been the founder, as far as we're concerned, he should have been executed. Should have been executed. Does that mean that, is this Gemara an admission of guilt? Does this Gemara, and by the way, I've heard rabbis say, of course we killed him. The Gemara says we killed him. So there you go. The Gemara says we killed him. The only question is, does the Gemara mean it? That's the only question. I'm going to show you a couple of more Gemaras soon as we go on, and then you'll begin to appreciate the complexity of what we just now saw. Face value, this is very simple. We killed him, no question, no problem, except it's very difficult to know when. It's very difficult to know who. It's very difficult to know where. All of that is missing from this text. In your spare time, you can go and you can look up all the psukim quoted by the other disciples and look what they're claiming and look what Chazal counter, and you realize that what you're witnessing is a polemic, a theological debate, more so than a trial. On the other hand, if you look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Kuf Zayin, this is far more interesting. Let me give you a little bit of background to this Gemara. The Gemara over here is talking about the proper way that a teacher should treat his students. The Gemara says that when you have a student that doesn't behave properly, you are supposed to push him away with your left hand and bring him closer with either your right hand or both hands. The reason for pushing away with the left is because the left presumably is not your strong hand. When you need to give discipline, you do not give discipline with all your strength. When you have to punish your kids, you don't use all your strength for this. Same is true with students. And when you pull them closer with your stronger hand. And you always leave room when you push someone away to pull them much closer than you push them away. That is what the Gemara tells us. The Gemara then says, but not like two people did. And just two people in Jewish history made a mistake on this point. One of the people, the Gemara tells us, was Elisha with Gehazi. Gehazi was a student, this is the time of the prophets. Gehazi was a student of Elisha, and he acted improperly. Elisha helped a woman, and when he was offered to be paid, he said no. And then Gehazi goes back and says, yeah, he always says no, but he really wants to be paid. And he took the money himself, and he caused a very big chilul Hashem. So he was pushed away with both hands by Elisha, who did not want anything to do with him anymore. And we can understand that, nonetheless the Gemara says he went too far. The second individual who the Gemara says went too far was Yeshua ben Prachya. The Gemara says, what's the story with Yeshua ben Prachya? What exactly transpired? What happened? That's the second source. Yeshua ben Prachya Maihi. What's the story? Kidekat linhu yanai malka l'rabbonon. Ozo Yeshua ben Prachya v'yeshu l'achzandria shamitzrayim. There are a couple of streets in downtown Jerusalem. Shimon ben Shetach, Hileni Hamalka, right? You know these streets? So Shimon ben Shetach was the head of the Sanhedrin. His sister was Hileni Hamalka. Her husband was the king. The king Yanai, he also has a little street there, was not a very nice man. He killed rabbis. He caused rabbis to flee. The only one who was safe was Shimon ben Shetach. Hileni Hamalka made short of that. But one of the rabbis who had to run away was Yeshua ben Prachya. When he ran away to Egypt, and he took his students with him, and one student he took was Yeshua HaNotzri. He took Yeshua with him to Alexandria. So it says that when Yanai killed the rabbis, and Yeshua ben Prachya ran away to Egypt together with Yeshua, when there was peace, Shalach Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach sent a message. Mineu Shalaim Irakodesh Lichi Alexandria Shomtraim. He sends a message from Jerusalem, the holy city. Go to Egypt and say, Achosi, my sister city, Baali Sharui Bisochech. My husband, which means the great Yeshua ben Prachya, is within your city. Vanochi Yoshevis Shomema, and I, Jerusalem, is sitting desolate. Basically, this is a very nice way of saying, please come home. Come, he gets up. Asav Isrami Leahu Ushpiza. He goes and he ends up staying in an inn. You'll notice the word Ushpiza is like the word Ushpiza, and it means guest. Ushpiza means a guest house. So he stays in a guest house on his way. Avdu Layokratuva, the proprietor or proprietress of the guest house, treats them very nicely. Omar, Yeshua and Prachya says, Kama yofe achsanya zu. How nice is the guest house? The word achsanya means guest house. Omar le. Now, Yeshua made a slight error over here. He actually made more than one error, but one was in term interpretation. He says, how nice is the guest house? And what Yeshua thought he had said was, how nice is the woman who owns the guest house? Because are we talking about the inn or the innkeeper? So he says, how nice is the inn? And Yeshua understood this to mean, how nice is the innkeeper? So basically, he thought his rabbi was telling him, check out the innkeeper. Yeshua responds and says, Eineha trutos. Her eyes are a little narrow, a little crooked. On a scale of 1 to 10, Yeshua says, I wouldn't give him more than a 7. Amar lei, he says to him, Rasha, bikacha ta'osek. You wicked person, that's where your head is at. Afik arba mea shifuri v'shmaite, which means in simple English, he excommunicated him. He sent him away, wanted nothing more to do with him. Also lakame kamazimnin, on many occasions, a number of occasions, it says, he came to ask forgiveness. Amrle, kablan, take me back. Lo havako mashkiach be. He would not pay attention to him. Yom achad havakakori kriyashma. One time Yeshua ben Prachya was in the middle of saying Shema. Also lekaimei, and Yeshu comes in front of him, sover lekabule, and this time he finally decided to take him back. Achvui le biyode, but he makes like a motion with his hand, like in the middle of davening. Wait a second, who sover midchi dochile? He said he's sending me away again. Ozel, he goes zokov levenisa, and he turns over a stone, v'ishtachavala, and he starts to worship it. Omer le, and then Yeshua ben Parachi says, Hadrbach, come back. Omer le, kach mukublani mimcha. He goes, I have a tradition from you. Kol hachote, whoever sins, who machti es arabim, and causes the masses to sin, ein maspika miyodolasos tshuva. He's unable to do tshuva. V'omer mar, and the Gemara continues with a further tradition. Yeshu kishef, he was guilty of magic, v'hisis v'idiach is Yisrael, and guilty of causing people to worship of Avodah Zarah. Now, how would I compare this Gemara with the first Gemara that we saw? This Gemara has a historical context. This Gemara has a real person in it. As a matter of fact, I would be very inclined to say that this Gemara is historical for a very simple reason. What's the point of the Gemara? The point is to tell us, to give us a lesson in how you give Musar. You push away gently, but you pull back with more strength. What is the Gemara telling us? That Yeshua ben Prachi was wrong. Yeshua ben Prachi pushed away too much. By the way, the same Yeshua ben Prachi who says in Pirkei Avos, Havidan kol adam kavzchus, says that he pushed away too strong. Would the Gemara have made up a story and made Rabbi Tana, Yeshua ben Prachi, look bad just to prove a point? No way. No way. If you want to make, you want to prove a point, you want to make a point in terms of Musar, you say it anonymously. You say, once there was a rabbi who pushed away his student, and this is what happened. There's no way in the world that anyone would have the chutzpah to make up a story like this about Yeshua ben Prachia and say Lashon Hara about Yeshua ben Prachia unless we have, this is a Masorah. Now, again, if you notice the difference between these two stories, here there's a person, a historical context, real people exist in this one. There's one other very interesting thing about this story. We know exactly when Yeshua ben Prachi lived. When's that? At least 100 years, at least probably closer to 150 years prior to Yeshua. Or at least prior to Yeshua of the New Testament, which, as I already said, doesn't concern us all that much. Let me ask you another question. Those two stories we just now read, are they speaking about the same person? Or are they talking about two different people? As a matter of fact, I'll pose the question even stronger. Do you think in antiquity there was only one person whose name was Yeshu? And you'll say to me, haha, but how many could have been sinners like this? Incidentally, Josephus has 21 different people named Yeshu in his book. None of them, by the way, are this one. There's 21 different people in the course of his writing the book of this, of more or less around the same time, 21 different people named Yeshu. So now I'll ask you again, is it possible, and I'll make it easy for you, is it possible that these two people are different? Of course it's possible. Is it possible that any person who claimed to have been a Messiah would have called himself Yeshu almost in a generic sense? Absolutely. Why? Because it means the Savior. Are we dealing with a title? Or are we dealing with a proper name? And then again, we have that other possibility. Are we dealing with an acronym of Yimach Shemo V'Zichro? There's another Gemara. And again, I'll read this Gemara, and then again, we'll make the evaluation about how to understand it on a historical level, not historical level. This Gemara is actually discussing a halacha. The halacha is regarding the laws of Shabbos. All of us know that you're not allowed to write on Shabbos. The question comes up, what if you write by virtue of scraping onto your skin? This is very close to the idea of a tattoo, and you'll all tell me you're not allowed to make a tattoo. Question is, what if you made a tattoo? You know how to make a tattoo. I assume most of you don't. You would take a needle and penetrate the skin, and then you would mix blood into the skin, going to where the, and that would cause a discoloration of that particular area. What if on Shabbos you took a needle and you wrote something on your hand? Are you guilty for breaking Shabbos by writing on your hand? That's the question that the Mishnah deals with. In the Mishnah, we have a machlokes between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Lezer says you're guilty if you write on your hand like this, by misaret, by scraping your hand and putting ink in. The Chachamim say you're pater. By the way, you're guilty for doing tattooing, but you're pater for writing on Shabbos. That's not why. It's not the normal way you write. It's not the normal way that people write. So it's not the normal way. We know by Shabbos, the issur d'oraisa of writing on Shabbos, the Torah prohibition has to be done in the normal fashion. So Rabbi Lezer says it is the normal fashion. The Chachamim say it's not. So the onus is on Rabbi Lezer to try to prove that this is in fact the normal way to write. Source number 3, Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Dalad. Hamisarid al Bisaro Tanya. So the Gemara now comments on the Mishnah. Amun lehem Rabbi Lezer lechachamim. Rabbi Lezer said to the Chachamim, "Valo ben Stada." Now we don't know anything else about this person. Now he's called over here Ben Stada, the son of Stada. We don't have a first name. We don't know a last name. The son of Stada. Vahalo ben Stada hotzik shafim mimitzrayim visrita sha'al bisaro. Didn't this fellow named Ben Stada smuggle out incantations and magic on his hand, on his body, on his person, by actually making these, by scraping these things onto his body? So what's Rabbi Lezer trying to say? It is a normal way to do it. Here he has a case where somebody did it this way. So if somebody does it this way, so it should be asur on Shabbos. What does the Gemara answer? Amrulo, the Chachamim say, shotahaya. He was an idiot. Ve'ein revin raya min ashotin. And you can't prove a halacha from an idiot. That is what you will find if you look in your Gemara. If you go back to the manuscripts, the Gemara continues. The Gemara asks, Ben Stada? Is his name in fact Ben Stada? Isn't his name really Ben Pandira? The Gemara says, Ben Pandira who? It's not Ben Stada, his name is really Ben Pandira. Now, I don't know how much that has helped you. So now the Gemara has rejected that it's Ben Stada, his real name is Ben Pandira. Amar Rav Chista explains, and I'll do this slowly so you can follow me. He says, Baal Stada, Boel Pandira. The woman's husband's name was Stada, so he's called Ben Stada. But the lover's name was Pandira. Okay, so if this got a little too complex to you, apparently it had happened at least one time in antiquity where a married woman had had an affair with somebody other than her husband. And therefore, her husband's name, the Gemara is telling us, is Stada. He's called Ben Stada. But the lover's name is Ben Pandira. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. Baal, we know the name of the husband. Baal Pappas Ben Yehudahu. The husband's name was Pappas Ben Yehuda. By the way, let me just add. We know a couple of things about Pappas Ben Yehuda. And I'm assuming right now that there was one Pappas Ben Yehuda. Tosfos tells us not to make that assumption. But assuming there was one Pappas Ben Yehuda, then we know a couple of things about him. One is that there's Gemara that tells us that Pappas Ben Yehuda acted in a very inappropriate fashion, that he was very suspicious that his wife would have an affair. So what did he do? And this is source number 8. It's Gemara in Gittin and Daf Tzadi. It says that Pappas Ben Yehuda used to lock his wife in his house whenever he would leave. He didn't trust her, so he would lock the doors whenever he would leave. So what did she do? Because there was so much distrust in the family. What did she do? So it says she climbed out the window and had an affair. So the Gemara comes and says, that's not the way to treat your wife. You don't lock her in the room. Okay? So that's at least one thing we know about Pappas Ben Yehuda. He is this known person whose wife cheated on him, but we're told that he also is not such a special person. Incidentally, when Rabbi Akiva is caught teaching Torah publicly, the person who comes over to him and says, Akiva, how can you teach Torah publicly? It's in source number 10, Gemara Bracha Samach Aleph. The person who comes over to him and says, Akiva, what are you doing? It's Pappas Ben Yehuda. It's interesting, he calls Akiva, Akiva, by his, without saying Rebbe Akiva, which most likely indicates an incredible amount of chutzpah that he had. Later on in the Gemara, when he gets arrested, and he sits in the prison next to Rebbe Akiva, then he says Rebbe Akiva. So if we have a theory of conservation of Pappas Ben Yehudas, and there is one Pappas Ben Yehuda, then we also just have noted something very interesting in terms of our timeline. Rabbi Akiva, no one knows when he really died. He maybe died around 130 to 132. He may have died another 10 years later, way after the Bar Kokhba rebellion was squashed. We don't know. There are no historical records exactly as to when he died. But if Pappas ben Yehuda visits him in prison, and his wife was the one who mothered our ben Stada, so then you're dealing with somebody, first of all, who is incredibly later than both the student of Yeshua ben Prachya and later than the hero of Mel Gibson's new movie and of the New Testament. So I'm just saying is that the timeline over here is incredible. That's probably part of what bothers Tosfos, because Tosfos knows the timeline, and Tosfos says that if this is the mother, again, we don't know that this is Yeshu yet, but if this is the birth of Yeshu, then the time is a little bit difficult. But that's, again, assuming that we have a theory of conservation of Yeshus as well, which may not be correct. So let's continue. We're still in the middle of source number 3, the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Dalet. It says, so far, now we know that the husband's name is Pappas ben Yehuda. So now what are we left with? What's the name of the father? Pandira. What's the name of the husband? Pappas ben Yehuda. What did the Gemara call him? Ben Stada. So what don't we know? Who Stada is? So the Gemara continues, says, oh, Ella Imo Stada. By the way, she's the only one left. Right? Process of elimination. Who's Stada? The mother Stada. So listen to the Gemara. The Gemara says, no, we know the mother's name. Imo, what was his mother's name? Miriam Magdale Sa'ar Nishayahava. That the mother's name was Miriam, and the next words are interesting. They don't mean what you think they mean, although they may. It means Mary, the hairdresser. Magdale Sa'ar Nishaya. Ah, some of you actually do know a little bit about the New Testament. Know there's some woman named Mary Magdalena. So guess what? They did speak Aramaic in those days. And Mary Magdalene would be Mary Magdalene Sa'ar Nishaya. Although there's one, you don't have to correct me, there's one thing which is very interesting over here. In the New Testament, there are two different Marys. One Jesus, two Marys. One Mary is the so-called Virgin Mary. This untainted mother of who they claim to be the Messiah. Untainted, untouched by original sin, the virginal Mary. There's this other Mary who is basically a hooker, who becomes Jesus' girlfriend, and he's the Savior. Of course, it's a platonic relationship, a term, by the way, I've never understood, given that Plato was homosexual, and therefore platonic relationship with a woman does not mean all that much. But if anybody wants, I'll explain that to you later. That in the way the New Testament reports the relationship, it's obvious that Mary Magdalena is this sinner, but Jesus is so great, he even befriends all the sinners. So guess what? The Mary in the New Testament who's the hooker and the other one who's a virgin, who's the mother, the Gemara says, no, no, no. The mother was the one who is the hooker. This is Mary Magdalene Sa'ar Nishaya. So there's only one Mary, as far as the Gemara is concerned. Ah, there's one thing which is missing here. What's that? Never called him Yeshu. So let's go on a little bit. The Gemara goes on to say, okay, but we still have a problem now. Who's Stada, right? So far we've eliminated the father, we've eliminated the husband, we've eliminated the mother. So who else can be Stada? So finally the Gemara says, Elokid, the Amri b'Pumpadisa, like they used to say in Pumpadisa, Stat da mibala. That's the one who cheated on her husband. So Ben Stada is the son of the one who cheated on her husband, and that's Ben Stada. So if you follow this through, we have over here a person who the Gemara identifies. And by the way, I have to stress something. How did this get introduced into our discussion? It's a halachic discussion. The rabbis took their halachic discussions quite seriously. Rabbi Elazar is trying to prove a point and to establish that if you write on your body in this way by scratching, it's considered to be a real writing. So he's bringing a point which he knows this is a real case. This is not in the middle of an agadata. This is not a story. He's bringing a case because he wants to prove his halachic point. The rabbis don't respond by saying, what are you talking about? That never happened. The rabbi's response is, he was an idiot. And don't bring proofs from idiots. The Gemara then continues and says, exactly who is this person? Why is he called Ben Stada? And the Gemara gives us enough information that we're able to identify, at least with 98% certainty, who it is we're talking about. Let's get to the last 2%. Source number 5 is Yerushalmi in Shabbos. Maaseh b'Rabbi Lazar ben Doma. Now, Rabbi Lazar ben Doma, if those of you who remember from the Gemara in Zvachim and Sadi Tes, he's the nephew of Rabbi Yishmael. He was bitten by a snake. Ubo Yaakov ish kfar sama. Yaakov, a man named Yaakov, which is a Jew, from the city or the town called Kfar Sama, came to heal him, faith healing, Mishem shel Yeshu Pandira. He came to do faith healing in the name of Yeshu Pandira. By the way, do you realize how valuable this Yerushalmi is for our identification? Now we realize that Pandira, his name was Yeshu. His mother is Mary. His mother is Miriam. Yeshu Pandira. By the way, I don't know if any of you ever heard the Yiddish expression, Yashka Kapandira. Yeah, this is where it comes from. Yeshu Pandira is in Yiddish, when they would say, I guess making fun a little bit, they would call it Yashka Kapandira, but this is based on Yeshu Pandira. Now, we're just left with one little open question. Is Yeshu Pandira the same person as Yeshu Anotzri? Are we dealing with the same individual, dealing with different individuals? What we also notice over here is that there were people going around by the time of Lozab ben Dama, going around healing people, doing faith healing in the name of this individual. I'll read it again. Ubo Yaakov ish kfar sama mishem shel Yeshu pandira lirafoso. He came to heal him. The lohi niach lo Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel would not let him do this. You know, there are three things that you can't let yourself be healed with, the Gemara says. One of them is Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, Gilei Raya, Shfich HaZdamim. You can't be healed through these things. Omer lo, ani mevi raya, shir pe'eni. He goes, I'll bring a proof. Elizabeth Dama says, I'll prove to you that I'm allowed to use this guy to heal me. Lo hispik lavi raya ad shemes, ben Dama. Before he's able to get the words out, he died. Omer lo, Rabbi Shmuel, ashrecha ben Dama, shetesa b'shalom in olam. V'lo peratzta gedirin shechachamim. He goes, thank God that you died before you broke through the wall of the rabbis, before you said something you shouldn't have said. Better you died this way than actually make an argument which would have been absurd and maybe break the laws and therefore actually use the faith healing. So the Gemara over here is very interesting. The Gemara over here also, I mean, I have no reason to believe that this is not a story. Again, notice all the Gemaras we read except for the first one. The people involved, we have names, we know who they are, we know when they lived, we know where they lived, we have details. The only Gemara that we're missing the details from is the first one, the one that says that we killed him. And when I throw that in with the other problems, I am, shall we say, intrigued. And I have to again ask the question, is the Gemara, when it says we killed him, dealing with a historical individual, or is that Gemara dealing with the person who the Jewish Christians revere? And are they responding and saying, this is what we would have done to him, and this is what we would have done to his disciples? And the whole thing over there is mainly a polemic. That's what I have to at least ask myself. Because aside from everything else, I have a problem. My problem is that one of our Yeshus lives far before our New Testament individual. And by the way, I have no problem saying the New Testament is wrong. Let me just say a couple of things about the New Testament. In the New Testament, there's something which is called the Gospels. The Gospels are four different stories of the life and times and death of Jesus. They contradict themselves. There is the so-called Synoptic Gospels, which are similar but different. And then you have another Gospel, which is completely different. All the Gospels are written by people that never met Jesus. They never met him. What are they trying to do? They're trying to write PR to make a new religion. So am I going to believe, I wouldn't believe a PR writer today who's writing about somebody who he knew. Would I believe a PR writer who's writing something when he has an agenda, when he's trying to prove something? Absolutely not. Who would I trust more, the Gemara, or would I trust the New Testament? No question about this, I trust the Gemara. Only problem is, and the challenge is, I told you, A, finding all the Gemara texts, which we found a good deal of them so far. There are a couple of more. We found a good deal of them today. Second challenge is interpreting the Gemara texts. What do they mean? And what I tried to do as we were proceeding is also to give you a sensitivity to understand how exactly you look at these texts and what Chazal meant to tell us. First possible conclusion that comes up, there was more than one man named Yeshu. Maybe even three different people named Yeshu here. You have the Yeshu who's with Yeshua ben Prachya, who may have been a rogue, who may have been guilty of Avodah Zarah, who may even have been executed. But he lives far before the founder of the New Testament, although I am the first one who's willing to admit maybe the whole New Testament story is a story which was basically literary fiction, but it's based on some historical events, it's based on some characters, and one of the characters it's based on is the character who we're talking about over here who lived far beyond that. I am absolutely willing to accept that as a possibility. The second person, it comes down to our various Papas ben Yehudas. Is there one or two different Papas ben Yehudas? Again, could you claim that we're all talking about the same person? You could. You could try to make that claim. But as I said, it's not such a simple claim. This person, Yeshu Pandira, is this the same person as Yeshu Notzri? I have no reason to say yes. One is called Yeshu Pandira, and the other is called Yeshu Anotri. Could you claim the same? Look, as far as Herford is concerned, all these people are the same, and the rabbis are confused, the rabbis have no idea what they're talking about, and hence will be the problems in dates. On the other hand, I would be far more comfortable to say the rabbis know exactly what they're talking about, and as I'm suggesting, it could be we're talking about different people. And for that matter, it could be that the New Testament is in fact a composite of different characters. And if you really want to think about it, they may have taken different Jesuses, if that's the plural for Jesus, and made them into one character. And then what's more interesting is taking Mary and making her into two characters. Because it's a little uncomfortable, the Mary who's presented over here in the Gemara. Would I be more inclined to believe the New Testament's description of how Mary got pregnant or the Gemara's description of how Mary got pregnant? I guess I don't have to answer that question. Now, there's one more thing that I wanted to mention, which is also someplace there in the collective consciousness of the Jewish community. I've also heard these things about how Yeshu was in the Beis HaMikdash. He took the Shem Hashem. Any of you ever hear this? He took the Shem Hashem, and then he was able to fly. He was able to do all kinds of things like that. Okay? This comes from a Jewish gospel. Such a thing as a Jewish gospel. It's a book which I have over here in front of me. It's called Toldos Yeshu Anotzri, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth. This is the Jewish version of events about what happened. This is not from the Gemara. It's not from a Midrash. This is probably written in the Middle Ages, probably between the year 800 and 1000. There's more than one version of this. Rashi quotes this. Don't want this taken out. You won't find it. Rashi quotes it in his commentary to Avodah Zarah. Rishonim knew about this and used this book. This is the Jewish version of events. The book that I'm holding is a book called Otzer Vikuchim. I don't know if any of you can find it, but almost anything you'd want to know is in it. It's called The Polemics and Disputations by J.D. Eisenstein. I also happen to have another book, and this one is available still today, which is called Otzer HaMidrashim, or Otzer Midrashim, by the same author, by this J.D. Eisenstein, who actually lived in St. Louis for a while, if I'm not mistaken. He lived in America, and he was a wealthy businessman, and he published many, many Jewish writings. He writes over here, this is a library of 200 minor midrashim. So if any of you were interested in Lag BaOmer coming up, he has a whole entry on Shimon Bar Yochai. And the page after Shimon Bar Yochai, he tells us about the existence of an individual whose name is Shimon Kippa. Shimon Kippa. Shimon Kippa, as far as the Toldos Yeshu HaNotzri are concerned, and again, I am now quoting material which is not in the Gemara. But as far as this literature is concerned, it tells us about this Shimon Kippa individual who in reality is the founder of Christianity, and let me tell you the story very briefly. The rabbis in the Gemara were very bothered. The rabbis by the time of the mission, the Tanaim, were very bothered. The Jewish Christians lived all over the place, and you could not tell who they were. They wore their tzitzis out, they kissed the mezuzah, They daven three times a day. They put on their tefillin. They kept kosher. And they believed in a false Messiah. What do you do? There were fights going on between the traditional Jews and these other Jews. They had heretical beliefs, and they caused a lot of trouble for the Jewish community. They tried to get the Romans to side with the Romans, and they tried as much as possible to get the Romans against the traditional Jews. And all this, by the way, is based on historical record. Then this tradition adds one more thing. A bunch of the rabbis got together and said, we have to do something. There was one of the Tanoim, his name was Shimon, he's called Shimon Kippa. One of the Tanoim named Shimon says, I have an idea, and I will do this if you accept this. But we all have to be in and on this together. I have a plan in order to separate these people from our religion, but I'm going to have to go undercover, deep undercover, and in order to do this, I want all of you to bear the responsibility together. So they all promise together, and he goes and he joins the Jewish Christians. Being one of the Tanoim, he does miracles. He knows the Shem HaMefarish. He knows the name of God. He impresses them. He brings people back from the dead. He does all the things that it claims that Jesus does in the New Testament. And he said, Jesus sent me over here to be your new leader. I'll make this very, very simple and concise. According to this story, Shimon HaKippa becomes the first pope. But he says, Jesus sent me, and he said that you should promise that none of you do anything to the Jews. Matter of fact, don't even bother with the Jews. The Jews are going to hell. Leave the Jews. Have nothing to do with the Jews. What I want you to do is come, and we have to focus on the non-Jews. Forget about Shabbos. We'll keep Sunday. Forget about kosher. Forget about bris milah. Forget about all the Jewish laws. That's not for you. We don't need this. And matter of fact, if you're paying attention, the character who's known as Paul, who's the founder of Christianity, that's what's described over here. It's a combination over here between Peter and Paul. Mary, I guess, whatever. And the name Peter is because he was poter them from doing the mitzvot. And according to this, he went to Rome. He built a tower over there, and he lived in the tower. And he said, I'm willing to stay with you, but all that I want is leave me alone. The amazing thing about some of these stories, by the way, is that according to this tradition, he was the one who wrote various prayers, piyutim, including, according to this introduction over here, he wrote the Ata Konanta Olam Berov Chesed, which we say on Yom Kippur. According to this tradition here, also mentioned, he's the one who wrote Nishmas Kochai, and that as he sat in isolation in Rome, being the Pope, he was writing secret letters back to the rabbis, writing tefillos, writing prayers, and still secretly he was a Jew, which means he went undercover and spent the rest of his life as a Christian in order to separate Christianity from Judaism. Now, to what extent any of this is historical, I can't tell you, but it's an unbelievable story. According to this, Shimon HaKippa, and again, this is one of the most elusive and interesting individuals in Jewish history, and you can find various things about him. There may even be a fast day, which is in his commemoration. There's a fast day which is written in the Shulchan Aruch in and by the way, if you're interested, on Source 12, the Machzor Vitri writes, Tfilos v'slichel shemasru lanu rabosenu anshei Hashem miyemos Shimon Kippa sheyasad seder shel Yom HaKippurim. He's the one who wrote the davening for Yom Kippur. Okay, how's that? There you have it, the Machzor Vitri. That's the Beis Medrash of Rashi, is the Machzor Vitri. The story of Shimon HaKippa you'll find in Source 13, 14, and 15, and 13, a little bit down where it's underlined, it says, V'nehu Mitzava aleichem shelo techogu eschag hamatzos as techogu yom misasa. That Jesus is commanding for you not to keep Pesach anymore, but keep the day that he died. And he's the one who takes these people outside of Judaism, thrusts them outside of Judaism. Which means according to this approach, Judaism creates Christianity as an independent religion because of a desire not to have them within Judaism anymore. That's what it says in this source. in Shulchan Aruch, which is in source 16, it says, "Bishmona b'teves nechtava hatora yivonis b'yimei tami amelech b'yachol shabalim sholosh yamim b'tespo lo noda ezu hiatzara she'irabo." He writes down over here in the Shulchan Aruch, the 9th of Teves, we have a fast day, but nobody knows why. That's the strangest thing you'll see in the Shulchan Aruch. There's a fast day, but we don't know why, but we fast. What is that? A fast day, but you don't know why? Some of the commentaries over here tell us, there's a Masorah going all the way back, telling us that Shimon HaKippa died on this day. And they weren't allowed to tell anybody what the reason was that we fast on that day. We fast for his neshama. That he went undercover, and he went into Christianity. He went to save Judaism from Christianity. That was the day that he died. That's his Yahrzeit on the 9th of Teves. And that's this thing that that the Shulchan Aruch says, we just don't know why. We don't know where it's from. Again, if anybody's interested afterwards, I could provide for you the sources on this. There is a Professor Lyman who has a whole shiur that he's given on this. And he has all the sources collected, an article he wrote on this as well, telling us exactly about the history of this Shimon Kippa. But let's conclude. I think you appreciate now at least some of the complexity of people getting up and saying what the Gemara says about Yeshu. It's difficult. It's very difficult to know what the Gemara says. You know, it would be very, very easy if all of our learning things were just black and white. You just read them and you understand them. Finding the sources is difficult. Understanding the sources is difficult. Again, do I trust the Gemara? Do I trust the New Testament? There's no question we trust the Gemara. The challenge is to know what exactly the Gemara means. Did the Jews kill Yeshu? I don't know who they killed. I don't know when they killed them. I don't know if Yeshu of the New Testament ever lived. I don't know when he lived. I'm saying there's just so many questions over here that it's completely irresponsible for someone to say, no, I have clarity as far as this goes. We don't know who the New Testament is talking about, and we have the possibility they're dealing with a composite figure. We don't know who the various Gemaras are talking about. Some of them are clear, some of them not clear. The main Gemara, which says, we killed him, I don't know who that Gemara is talking about. And as I said, I have enough questions on that Gemara, including breaking what is considered normal halacha, to kill someone on Erev Pesach, where I have to ask myself, is the Gemara telling me what happened, or is the Gemara dealing already with the traditions which are found in the New Testament and saying, yes, New Testament says he was killed. Yes, it's not so much as we did kill him, we would have killed someone like this. If someone went and did the things that he did, yes, he would have been killed. The reality, I suspect, we'll never know. But at least, hopefully, after, you know, this hour, we know a little bit more than we did before we began. Okay? Thank you. I'll take questions if you want me.
Is it possible that first Gemara that's saying he's killed him, that that's a counterfeit?
I wouldn't say counterfeit. But
there's one.
But Gemaras have different... Have different
could it have been planted by the Christians?
No,
or it's
no.
Framed?
No, I wouldn't think so. I don't think they could have done that. I don't think so.
I actually found there's a book that is published at University of South Florida by a professor. I can't remember his name. But it's basically, I think the title is Who's the Real Messiah or Who's the Real Jesus? Mm-hmm. It's in English, and so you might want to add it to your... Do a Amazon search.
Okay.
Thank you. It's basically saying exactly what you said, though. Okay. But,
oh, then he's right.
No, but it might be interesting to read in English.
Right. Okay.
It's a very small book.
So. Okay. Thank you very much.
I have a guest in my Gemara that says on Kuf Zion, he calls him also Yeshua and Nosi over there also, which would very much suggest a Hekesh with the Gemara and Mem Gemara and the Aleph. If that's the case, how does that affect things?
If it did say Yeshu Hanotzri there, then you have to claim that their dating is completely off. Because Yeshu and Brachil is far before.
Yeah, it's about 150 years
ago. Yeah. And the question is, who put that in?
So if you look down here, just right at the end, where you quote, it says, Amama Yeshu Hanotzri Kshepa Pachah Yisra.
Where does this little text come from?
They added it back from here.
They took it from there?
That was stored away in the Vatican? Where did you get this from?
No. We have manuscripts. It doesn't say Yeshu in here.
That's a Yeshu too, then.
No, it says Yeshu. It doesn't say notes.
Really?
It's probably like carried away. And just, no, I'm saying it doesn't. I'm not going to say conclusively. You have to look at all the manuscripts, but it's. I would assume it doesn't.
You mentioned there's a professor who wrote an article.
Professor Lyman.
Professor Lyman.
Yeah, it's an article. If you look up, if you know how to search for articles.
L-I-N?
L-I-B-M-A-N. I have it at home. If you really bother me, I'll bring it in.
Okay. The accuracy of these texts in question at all in terms of
generally
the authentic Talmudic texts?
Yeah, absolutely. We have Kisayan before the printing press.
Right.
We have Gemaras from Muslim lands where they didn't have to worry about what Christian people thought. No, this is.
And Gearses are different here and there.
Gearses, this is a separate issue.
Probably came to this house because the church took them out.
Yes.
And then we assume it is the reason because they're talking about the issue. Or we have some kind of tradition that they're talking about.
Is it okay?
Anything that thought can get the Jews in trouble was taken out.